Blog Talk Radio.
I could never make
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Sports Urban Legend. Along with my co-host Macaulay Matthew, I'm of course Way My Mo. What's up, Mac? What's going on?
Hey, man. How's it going?
I'm doing good, man. You know, pumped to be on this show as always with you.
Yeah, pumped to be on as usual.
And I'm also equally happy to be on with you all, ladies and gentlemen, for another episode of Sports Urban Legend. Where we talk sports, entertainment, and everything else. You know the deal. We're going to talk to you about all the latest stuff going on in the world of sports and entertainment. You know, we're going to talk about, as you could see with the theme here, we're going to preview our thoughts on the latest season of Cobra Kai, which is the fifth season. We'll give you our thoughts on this season and how it stacks up with the previous four seasons. We'll also talk about what's going on in wrestling with the AEW Grand Slam events that they've had on Rampage and Dynamite, you know, at the Arthur Ashe Stadium, in Queens. We'll also, you know, let you know what happened in Raw and SmackDown, give you our thoughts on that. And of course, the current state of, you know, the Mets, the Jets, the Giants, the Yankees, and of course, unfortunately, talk about the latest story surrounding the Celtics coach. Behind the scenes, we'll also tackle that as well. But most importantly, you guys know the number. And that number is 563-999-3529. That's 563-999-3529. So feel free to talk about any of these topics or more. We would love to hear from you. With that said, before we dive into the Cobra Kai, I guess we got to talk about, you know, the elephant in the room that's been in the world of sports lately. And unfortunately, that's, the story surrounding the Celtic head coach, Udoka. I'll be honest with you. I don't know the whole story, but from what I've heard, surrounding, Ime Udoka was basically, he unfortunately was, unfaithful with his wife, actress Nia Long, who's been in, so many countless shows like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and, other films, over the decades, the span of her illustrious career. But, now as a result of Udoka's, unfaithfulness, now he's, as of right now, he's suspended for the entire NBA, upcoming NBA season. And apparently he was, apparently had an affair with somebody who, somebody who worked within the organization. And, it's just a horrible situation. I mean, he should have known better, not to put himself in that situation. I mean, there's literally nothing more I could say. I mean, he should have never, did what he did. What's your thoughts on this whole thing?
So I've been following this story closely. allegedly he had an affair with a female staffer, mm-hmm. who is now reported to be the travel planner for the team. And this travel planner also planned Nia Long's flights as well, to see, this affair went on for who knows how long, mm-hmm. But it's being reported now that they had a fling for a while, and then they ended the fling, but Udoka was still sending inappropriate messages towards the female staffer and made inappropriate comments towards her as well, and that led her to reporting him to the front office. And then that's when the Celtics organization began a year-long investigation. This was not a recent investigation. This has been going on for a while now, even looking into this. And they pretty much found evidence that he acted inappropriately. He violated organizational policies, and because of that they suspended him for a year, which some people think it's harsh, but it's in the rule book. You can't harass. It sounds like he was harassing her. I mean, I don't think they suspended him just for having a consensual relationship with a woman.
I mean, then a lot of there'd be probably nobody playing the NBA,
right?
As
right.
bad as that sounds.
So there's more to this story, but it sounds like he was harassing her after they ended their fling, and that's pretty much why the Celtics suspended him. Nia Long is the victim in all of this. Well, female staffer, if she was being harassed, she's the victim also. But, I mean, the other victim is, of course, his wife, who he cheated on, and one of the most – beloved Hollywood actresses out there.
Oh, yeah.
Nia Long, who shares a son with him. And now she has to, you know, face the public, and it's embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely embarrassing to her. But
yeah,
this whole story is a mess. It's one big mess right now.
Yeah, apparently, like you said, they have a son, and apparently they've been engaged since 2015. And with this bombshell, I don't foresee them ever tying the knot. If she even plans on, you know, staying with him after this, you know, act of betrayal.
Who knows? You know, we've seen crazier things, so you never know. But right now it's not looking good for him. So
yeah, he still could get fired.
Well, there are reports that he might even resign. So we'll see.
I mean, it's not worth it, man. Whatever he thought he got out of it, I mean, it's never worth it, man. It's like all these shows, like, you know, all those talk shows from back in the days, like, I don't know, Maury, Jerry Springer, all those type of shows where, you know, the guy tries to, you know, who does, you know, cheats on his wife and then end up being with someone who's worse than his wife, and then he tries to go back with his wife, and it's like, you know, he gets to the point of no return, and, you know, people don't learn. It's just, you know, a lot of people, they just get tempted, and they just blow. It's like they feel like they're in Las Vegas or something. Like, they put all this in, and they think they're going to get a high risk, high reward, and they end up with nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a stupid gamble to do, you know? I mean,
it's crazy.
Messed up. He ruined everything. You know, his
career,
his relationship,
his
career,
his wife. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even if she did go back to him, it's, you know, which I strongly doubt. The relationship is never going to be the same because, you know, that trust barrier was broken. So
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're just gonna, you know, see what happens. You know. No, I just feel bad, you know, for Nia, you know, in this situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, the kids, you know, his kids and, you know, the kids they share together, you know. You know, who knows if they could be bullied as a result of this. I mean, especially the youngest one. I mean, hopefully that's not the case, but it's just a messed up situation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. Let's shift gears. We'll definitely keep you all posted as we go on. Let's move on to the Jets. And man, what a game that was. Sunday afternoon, man. They were trailing by 13 points with less than 2 minutes to go, and you know, they pull off a miraculous comeback to even up the series. You know, they scored 14 unanswered points on the road in Cleveland against the Browns, and now the Jets are going to try to build upon this victory and host the Bengals. And I'd say it's definitely the signature win of Salah's brief career with the Jets. And hopefully they could, you know, build upon it. What's your thoughts on it? They're 1-1 as we speak, and they're going to be hosting the 0-2 Bengals.
Yeah, who went to the Super Bowl last year.
Right. So far they look like they're having the, you know, the Super Bowl loser jinx right now, starting off 0-2. So we shall see if Burrow can bounce back after he's been sacked 13 times in these first two games. So at this rate, he might if he keeps this up, he might break David Carr's record with 76 sacks literally 20 years ago, which obviously that's one record he doesn't want to break, similar to the Mets' hit-by-pitch record, which they did break a few days ago. But we'll talk a little bit more about the Mets in a few minutes. But, yeah, what's your thoughts on the Jets so far this year and this upcoming series with the Bengals?
Well, it's still too early to tell. I mean, that was a very good win last week, but too early to tell. You know, Flacco has played decent, but you have now, what's the quarterback's name that's coming back? I'm forgetting his name. Zach Wilson. He's coming back. So I don't know what you're going to do with Flacco, you know, but, you know, it was a good win. I mean, you got some young guys on this team now that are emerging. Garrett Wilson is looking good at the wide receiver position. Michael Carter, Breece Hall, the rookie. You know, so Jets have some young talent. And we'll have to see how this young talent fares as the season goes on. But and the defense has to play better, though. Defense does not look sharp. So that Jets defense might be an issue, you know, during the season. And we'll see how they do, you know, tomorrow against the Bengals. I mean, the Bengals are hungry. You know, they're 0-2, so they're looking for – they're desperate for a win. And, you know, when their offense is going, you know, it's one of the best in the league. So we'll see how the Jets can stop the Bengals tomorrow. But you know, right now it's too early to tell, you know, how the Jets are going to do this year. We still have to wait and see.
Do you know how the Jets can avoid the Bengals?
How?
Soar. Bengals can't fly.
Yeah.
They're gonna need another performance by, you know, Flacco leading the charge and the young rookies, you know, living up to their potential for them to you know, extend this to a 2-game winning streak, especially at home.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a very good game. Hopefully the Jets can pull it out, but it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it definitely will be. But shifting gears to your boys, the Giants, you're going to have a big game Monday night against, you know, the Dallas Cowboys at MetLife Stadium.
Yeah, that's going to be a very good game. I mean, the Giants, they're 2-0 for the first time in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, they've had the two back-to-back games where, you know, they've pretty much have upset wins, I would say. You know, they had an upset win that first week against the Titans. And I think they had an upset win last week against the Panthers because the Panthers probably may have been favored to win that game. But defense has been looking real good. Saquon Barkley has been looking like the Saquon Barkley that we saw in the in his first two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm liking how the Giants are playing right now. You know, they have a lot of momentum in their way, and right now the Cowboys are a bit banged up. They lost Dak Prescott for a number of games. Cowboys' offense looks a little shaky as well as their defense. So I think the Giants can pull out this win on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they could do it. They're going to be at home as well. You know, they might be 3-0 after Monday night. You know, we shall see. It'll be a good game, as the Cowboy and Giant games are usually.
Mm-hmm. And they got to contain Ezekiel Elliott, and you know, hope that they could they won't get a career game out of you know, the backup quarterback Cooper Rush, who helped the Cowboys beat the Cincinnati Bengals, who are of course facing you know, the Jets tomorrow.
Yeah.
So hopefully, hey, we'll see. Hopefully, both New York teams can win consecutive games on consecutive days.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely find out come Monday. You know, with your guys playing that, you know, marquee matchup on Monday.
Yeah, it's going to be a big game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we beat the Cowboys 3-0, we set them back 1-2. I think getting off to a 3-0 start will be great for us. It'll be really good.
It definitely would. And it would definitely erase the bad taste of your guy's mouth from that old regime that you guys had for the past couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so far so good, you know. Mm-hmm. We've been more aggressive this year. I like it.
Mm-hmm. And shifting gears, your Yankees, they've been playing a lot better lately. You know, they've been waking up from, you know, facing the Red Sox and, of course, Judge's, you know, pace of, you know, trying to catch, you know, the Roger Maris' AL record, which, of course, he did with the Yankees, of course. And then, of course, I think he tied, what, Babe Ruth recently? I don't think he's hit
for 60 home runs.
Yeah, he hasn't hit a home run since then. So, you know, he's just basically on Yankee rarefied air, you know, tying 60, you know, with Babe, a record that stood the test of time for extremely long time, you know, until, you know, Maris hit the, you know, him and Mantle were on that home run chase in 61. And then, of course, you know, in the National League side of it, the overall home run record was of course, you know, Sosa and McGuire that 98 season. And then they got McGuire had that record. And, of course, now Barry Bonds has the overall record, you know, with 73. So, 73 is I know, as shocking as how Judge has been doing this year, I think 73 is a little too much, is a little out of reach, but...
Yeah, there's not many games left for him to hit 73.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a possibility where he could get to maybe 65.
Yeah, that seems realistic.
He's at 60 right now. I mean, the pitchers... Mm-hmm. He hasn't seen a lot of good pitches to hit mm-hmm. since he hit 60 home runs, and they've been walking him a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
So right now it's a bit tough for him to get to break that record. Hopefully he does it in the next game or so where mm-hmm. we could see him break that record. These last several games he hasn't had the opportunities because he's
mm-hmm.
been walked or not getting the pitches that he wants. So
mm-hmm.
you know, we'll see. You see, once he does break the record, I think it'll be a great moment. Whoever catches that ball will sure enough be a millionaire if they don't give it back to the. I wouldn't, you know, if I caught the ball, I'm keeping that ball. I'm not giving it to the Yankees. I'm gonna sell that, or actually, I'm gonna negotiate with the Yankees organization to give me $1 million. I don't care. I'm sorry. I mean, wouldn't you? If you caught that home run. Record ball, what would you do with it?
Well, yeah, I mean, as much as I'd love to, you know, do the normal thing and give it back, but I think I'd have to hold on to it. I mean, I'd hold on to it and see, you know, if he could be reasonable and give me a good deal. You know, if not, then I'll just have to hold on to it and decide what I'm going to do with it next, if that was the case.
Right now it's good for baseball. You know, very good for baseball, what he's doing, and also what Pujols just did. Pujols hit 700 home run. Seeing him with the Cardinals again, and he set that record, so congrats.
Yeah, congrats to him.
One of the greatest hitters in baseball.
Hopefully that's the only greatest thing he does this whole year, you know, this year, you know, because I hope him and Wainwright and Molina don't have their third ring, you know, where they go out with a bang, you know, And, you know, Mets will be the casualty, and possibly even the Yankees could be a casualty of them winning their third title together in their, you know, their swan song. But, yeah, congrats to him, you know, 700 career home runs. He definitely seems rejuvenated back in St. Louis, where he always belonged, you know.
Yeah.
It's sad to see him, you know, as a baseball fan. I mean, as a Mets fan, I mean, you know, him going to you know, Anaheim, I mean, I wasn't crying over it, but purely as a baseball fan, you know, when you have a legendary guy like that, you know, you gotta stay with your team, you know, and that's what the Yankees got to do with Judge, because Barry Bonds looks like he wants to lure Aaron Judge over there, you know, because Judge grew up a Giants fan, you know, in the Bay Area, and Barry Bonds was his favorite player. So, yeah. So basically, the Yankees they got to do what the Yankees usually do and pay the guy his money. You know,
yeah,
and it's gonna
he's
cost
much,
them.
He's pretty much carried us, you know, throughout this, throughout this year. If not for him, you know, I don't know where we would be. But I mean, overall, the Yankees have been playing really good baseball lately. You know, 14-4 in our last 18 games. We've now won 6 in a row after beating Red Sox today.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting out at the right time, and we're getting some guys back also. So. I like the direction the Yankees are going, heading into the postseason right now. This is the perfect time to get hot, and they're playing good baseball right now, so hopefully they can keep it up.
Yeah, we'll definitely see you very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And shifting gears with the Mets are, you know, in a much tougher race right now. As we speak, they are they have a game and a half lead on the Braves. You know, the Mets was on a 6-game winning streak recently. The Braves, snapped a 3-game losing streak, which made them fall to 2.5 games behind the Mets. So, you know, Mets, you know, they won 3 out of 4 against the Pirates to write their ship back. Friday night, which was yesterday, the Mets just clobbered the A's with a bunch of former A's players. Bassett, you know, he got the victory against his former squad. Canna as well. Escobar hit a grand slam, his first career grand slam. I think maybe Alonso might have homered yesterday. I'm not sure. But for sure, he definitely did hit his 38th home run this year. They went out to a great lead in the first inning. They had Lindor hit a sac fly for his first time in his career, hitting knocking 100 RBIs. So congrats to him. Then Pete Alonso in that same inning hit a 2-run home run, which was his 38th home run of his of the season, and most importantly, he's one RBI shy of tying the record set by Piazza and David Wright with 124 RBIs. But that was the only highlight of the game, the day, because that was one of the main highlights of the day because, man. Once that bottom first happened, man, it was just it was a nightmare. You know, the ground didn't look like his old self. I think he struck out the first person, and then afterwards, then Gary Cohn and Ron Darling was mentioning that Angel Hernandez was there, and then once I heard that, I was like, oh no. So. Then, sure enough, he walked back-to-back batters. I mean, walking one person, DeGrom walking one person is history enough. Walking back-to-back guys is like, it was a warning sign. And then afterwards, he gave up like this, what was it, a two-run double, because McNeil he was going for the ball, and he slipped, and the ball went over his head. Had he would have just stood there, he would have caught that ball. But yeah, that was the beginning of the end. Then, you know, right after that, he was arguing with Angel Hernandez, because Angel Hernandez had some pitches that clearly should have been strikes, but he didn't call it. That normally are called strike, he didn't call it. And you know, DeGrom was talking to him about the pitch selections, you know, the missed strikes. And, you know, he was asking for the ball back, and then Angel Hernandez, like, menacingly threw the ball right back at him, which DeGrom, you know, got the ball, and he just proceeded to give up, two more runs, which snapped his, the MLB record and his own personal record of 40 consecutive games where he allowed 30 runs or less. I mean, 3 runs or less per game. And, you know, it was just a disaster performance. The Mets was able to tie the game back briefly when Mark Vientos, one of their top prospects, hit his first major league home run. So congrats to Vientos, which was the other highlight of the game for the Mets. And the last one, because DeGrom only went 4 innings. He would proceed to give up a home run, a solo home run, which proved to be the game winner, which put the A's leading 5-4, and the final score was 10-4. The Mets fall to the Oakland A's to even up the series, and now DeGrom is now 5-3 for the season, and now they're hoping Scherzer can have a max Scherzer type performance to make them at least leave Oakland with the victory instead of the sweep. And the Phillies didn't do us no favors this time. The Phillies won the first 2 games Thursday and Friday. But today the Phillies were no help for the Mets, as usual. And I think the final score was 6-3. So, yeah, the Braves got back to their winning ways, and Mets with Scherzer gotta salvage this victory. So, what's your thoughts on the Mets, the currency of the Mets, and their race with the Braves?
Well, right now that's a tight race in the National League, in the National League East right now. The Braves were playing really good for a while there, where it looked like they couldn't lose a game, but they've kind of slowed down a bit. Mets haven't taken advantage of it though. The Mets could have pulled away easily, been up 5 games by now, but. You know, it's going to be a tight race. It's going to go down to the wire between these two teams to decide who wins this division. Surely if whoever ends up losing this division, they're probably going to end up facing possibly the – who's – I think it's – is it the – no, it's not the Brewers, is it? Let me look and see the standings again. I'm forgetting who would be the wild card. You're going to have to pay – because this year you have to play – you have to play an actual series. It's not one and done. It's an actual. You have to win best out of 3, right? This year,
mm-hmm.
In the wild card. Okay,
yeah.
So it would be the Brewers or the Padres, one of those 2 teams. So whoever loses whoever doesn't win the division of National League East, you have to face either the Padres or the Brewers. Out of those 2 teams. You know, it's tough because both Brewers and Padres can be tough. But I don't know. Padres have, the better pitching, so I probably wouldn't want to face them if I were either the Mets or the Braves. So, you got to win the division, just to make sure you're not in that scenario. And also, if you're in that wild card series, you know, you're not going to be able to start your best pitchers, you know, in the first few games of the division series. Yeah, so and Mets, you know, they had a great year, and they got to top it off by winning this division. You know, they cannot go into a wild card series because, you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be very tough. So, yeah, we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. But today was not a good day for the Mets. Angel Hernandez, you know, DeGrom not pitching well. So, yeah, you just got to move on and see what's what. You guys won yesterday, right? Didn't you give them an ass whooping the other day? Okay.
Yeah, we whooped them, what was it, 9-2?
Yeah, you guys beat them like how I are, do the girls on on vacation. So, so hopefully tomorrow you guys go to win the series.
Well, hopefully they'll win tomorrow and see what happens. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, definitely.
But shifting gears. I don't know if you got a chance to see any of the AEW Dynamite event that happened on Wednesday night. I mean, they also had Rampage on Friday, but
yeah, I did not.
Well, here's what happened on Rampage on Wednesday night. Sting and Darby Allin defeated the House of Black minus Malakai Black, you know, formerly known as Aleister Black, because he got his request to be released. Hook and Action Bronson defeated Angelo Parker and Matt Menard from the Jericho Appreciation Society. Samoa Joe and Wardlow defeated Tony Nese and Josh Woods. Sammy Guevara defeated Eddie Kingston because Eddie Kingston choked out Sammy Guevara, but he didn't get rid of the hold. The match was over, so they reversed the call. Jade Cargill retained the TBS championship by defeating Diamante. And what was I gonna say? Trina, after the match, she slapped Diamante when she was coming to the ring with her, but now she
slapped her.
Yeah,
bitch, like Diamante, a bitch slap.
Yeah, basically.
Oh,
after Diamante, you know, lost the match, so now Trina is allied. I guess she's an honorary baddie. That's what Jade Cargill calls like her woman faction.
Wow.
Hangman Adam Page won the Golden Ticket Battle Royale, which is essentially a Royal Rumble match, and he will face Jon Moxley for the AEW title on October 18th in Jon Moxley's hometown of Cincinnati, Ohio. And Ricky Starks defeated Powerhouse Hobb in a Lights Out match. Oh, yes, and in the Sting-Darby Allin match, after they defeated, the House of Black, Sting's former rival, the Great Muta, made his AEW debut, and he helped out Sting when he was getting attacked by the House of the House of Black. And then also the other bigger news. Oh, actually, that was on Rampage, I should say. That was Rampage on Friday night. But the even bigger AEW news was what happened on Wednesday night. A lot of title changes happened that day. Saraya, formerly known as Paige in WWE, she made her AEW debut. Chris Jericho, he defeated Claudio Casnoli, formerly known as Cesaro, to capture the ROH championship. This is Chris Jericho's eighth title reign as a heavyweight champion he's calling it the Ocho. The Acclaimed, they defeated Swerve in Our Glory, which had Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee as the champions, but now the Acclaimed regained the title again to be the new AEW Tag Team Champions, which the fans were like, they were abuzz in that game, in that match. They were really pulling for the Acclaimed. I mean, they claim, like, last year they were, like, a really hated tag team, but now they are fans' favorites. And now they come into the ring with Billy Gunn as their manager after they had the feud with Billy Gunn's sons. And now he's allied with them. And then you have Pac defeating Orange Cassidy to retain the All-Atlantic Championship. Tony Storm defeated Britt Baker, Athena, formerly known as Ember Moon, Serena Deeb, who, of course, was in the Straight Edge Society with CM Punk like about a decade ago, to retain the term AEW Women's Championship because Thunder Rosa got injured and they had to vacate the title. So Tony Storm, as a result, won that title, but she retained the title, at Arthur Ashe Stadium on Wednesday night. And then that's when Saraya, again, formerly known as Paige, made her debut. And, you know, she did, you know, she was, you know, yelling, "This is my house," like she, you know, she did in her WWE days, and celebrated in the ring with Athena and Toni Storm. And then last but not least, you had Jon Moxley defeat Bryan Danielson to be the new AEW champion after the title was vacated after CM Punk's, injury and possible suspension when he had that backstage brawl with the Elite and some other members after the pay-per-view was over. Backstage. So Jon Moxley, he regains the title back and he defeated his current Blackpool Combat Club member, Bryan Danielson. So Jon Moxley is yet again the AEW champion. So, you know, congrats to all the winners, you know, who won.
Yeah, congrats.
During this Grand Slam event. And then you shift over to WWE.
So Moxley is the champion. So I heard people talking about the big match with him and Daniel Bryanson.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you were talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they're both part of the Blackpool Combat Club, which is a group they founded in honor of William Regal, who's their manager. It has Moxley, it has Danielson, it has Cesaro, who's he was going by his real name, Claudio Castagnoli, and they have Wheeler Yuta on that group. Cesaro, now known as Claudio, his real name, he lost the title to Jericho, the Ring of Honor title, because Jericho, I think Jericho low-blowed him and then hit the Judas effect to gain the ROH title. And then with the vacated title, Jon Moxley won it back, which I felt was a... as much as I'm a fan of Moxley, I thought it was a failed opportunity to put the title on Bryan Danielson. I mean, he hasn't won the AEW title yet. Moxley, this is like, what, Moxley's third time he won the AEW title? You know, I mean, to me, it would have made more sense to put on Bryan Danielson and then have, him fight MJF, because MJF... won that casino title match a few weeks ago to be the number one contender. Essentially, he has like a Money in the Bank scenario, so he could cash in anytime he wants. So it would have made more sense for him to have that opportunity to go against Bryan Danielson down the road and him cash it against him. But that's something that, you know, we'll see what will happen. So as of right now, you know, Moxley is going to be facing, Hangman Adam Page in his hometown in Cincinnati, Ohio. And then, you know, you got MJF lurking in the shadows to try to win that title, his first ever title in AEW, after threatening for over a year that he's gonna leave go to WWE. So who knows? Whenever his contract goes up, so we'll see what happens with that. But let's shift gears to Cobra Kai season 5, man. What do you think? What do you think about the season overall? And do you think, if you think it's the best season of all time of this series so far? And if so, why?
I think it's the best season so far in this series. The reason being is that Silver is probably the greatest villain, you know, more so than Kreese.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the Karate Kid films, I think Silver is like by far the biggest nemesis for Daniel-san.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in this season, I mean, he was just like, he was in Darth Vader mode almost, this guy. You know, I mean, there was so much going on in this season, more so than other seasons. I mean, you had Kreese locked up in jail, in prison, trying to escape. You had Terry Silver trying to expand the Cobra Kai and recruiting more students, and him trying to make Daniel's life miserable. You had Daniel and Chosen trying to take down Silver. You had Matt Barnes. They brought him back, and he's now working in a furniture store.
Mike Barnes,
yeah, sorry.
You know, the basketball player.
Yeah, Mike Barnes, I meant, sorry. So you had him make a return. You had Miguel trying to locate his father in Mexico. It was in Mexico, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you had Sam trying to unsure about her relationship with Miguel. So there's so many storylines in this. You know, it just kept you like, you couldn't focus on just one storyline because there's so much going on this season, and that's what made it so great. Because it wasn't overwhelming, it wasn't confusing, but it just kept you in anticipation of what's going to happen next with this storyline or that storyline, you know? And I don't know, just the impact of Silver making Cobra Kai this dominant, trying to make the Cobra Kai much bigger and dominant than it was. I mean, that was pretty impactful, you know, in this season. And yeah, I mean, he was like in Darth Vader mode, like I said. I mean, this guy was like the biggest nemesis that we've ever seen in any Karate Kid / Cobra Kai season ever. You know, more so than Kreese, more so than Mike Barnes, more so than Chosen, or more so than
Johnny
Lawrence back in the Karate Kid 1, you know? I mean, this guy, he was almost unstoppable, I thought. You know, it took a beat down from Daniel at the end there to finally take him out, and him then finally getting arrested also. This season had it all, man. I mean, the storylines, the action, the presence of Silva, whether or not he's going to be taken down or if Cobra Kai is going to expand even more. I mean, there's so many things that just kept you anticipating and just kept you wondering what's going to happen next. And that's what made the season so great. So I think it is the best season that we've seen so far in this Cobra Kai series.
Yeah, man, I'm with you, bro. I mean, I think I agree with you. I definitely think it's the best season, hands down. Basically, what we saw was a scenario. What would have happened if Silva would have won Karate Kid 3, the tournament, with Mike Barnes? What the scenario would have been? And yeah, we saw that nightmare scenario come true. You know,
yeah.
Basically he conquered the valley and he had all these dangerous senseis, including the granddaughter of the sensei that taught him and Kreese the Cobra Kai style. I mean, it was great. And there was so many, like you said, there's so many things to unpack with that season. You had the dream matchups, you know, of Choizan and Johnny teaming up and, you know, reminiscing about what they hated about Danielson in the movies and how, you know, they gained to respect them. So, I mean, it was just a great callback. And then you had Mike Barnes pop up.
And it's unlike the Mike Barnes that we saw in Karate Kid 3, where he was a bully and
mm-hmm.
being vicious.
Mm-hmm.
He's really mellowed and he's more focused on his business and his
mm-hmm.
family life. And then Daniel and Silva enter his life again and completely ruin it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
so,
the funny thing is like, the last episode, which, I mean, my goodness, we're going to dive into that. Like, when they kidnapped him in the penultimate episode, you know, I was like, who's this person? And then, like, before they reveal, I'm like, wait a minute, it might be Mike Barnes, because they haven't showed him, you know what I mean? Like, it was, and sure enough, it was him. Like, it was just an awesome season finale, but I'm gonna dive more into that. But yeah, another thing I loved, you know, other than the dream matchups, you know, and the fighting between, you know, Silver and Mike Barnes and Johnny Lawrence and Choizan and all that stuff, was the addition of the girl, the love, and was it Amy, the girl he liked in his friend / potential love interest from the Karate Kid 3.
Oh yeah, right.
By default, she's the worst of his love interests. Not because
worse than looks. You mean because you mean looks or
no? I mean romantic wise.
Oh, okay.
Because and I'll tell you why that happened. Because I always thought it was, you know, other than, you know, Kumiko and Allie, you know. It was more of a platonic relationship, and then I found out maybe two years ago why. The reason why casted her, and she was 16, and at that time he was probably like 25. So, that's the reason. Like, they shouldn't have casted an underage girl to be with a dude, you know, a grown dude, you know. But what they did.
Their relationship in that Karate Kid 3, though, was ambiguous. Like, you couldn't really tell what was going on there. If they were really friend, or if they were in a relationship, they didn't really make that clear in Karate Kid Part 3 what they were.
Well, yeah, exactly. But that was the reason why, because it was like they were teasing, like they were dating, but you could see it was more a platonic kind of thing. You didn't really see the feelings that he had strong feelings for Kumiko and Allie, which basically his feelings for Allie is what caused his decades long feud with Johnny all those decades, you know. But yeah, that was the reason behind it. But what they did,
I gotta correct you that
Johnny's feeling for Ali is what caused a feud with Daniel.
It's both of them.
You know?
It's both of them because he liked her. He liked Ali too in Karate Kid 1. He liked her too. He liked her too, and Johnny liked her. Both liked her, and Johnny couldn't let go as she moved on, and Johnny was pestering him, and you know, that's what caused them liking Ali and them, you know, feuding over it is what caused their feud that they finally got rid of, you know, a couple of seasons into Cobra Kai, probably season 3. Was the season when Ali came in, right? I don't think she came in season 4. I think that was season 3 when she...
Yeah.
Elizabeth
wasn't that, that was season 2 and 3, wasn't it?
Didn't she make
an appearance in another season also?
No. She only popped up for, like, those couple of episodes.
Oh, no, I think he was texting her.
Yeah.
He was, like, texting her and seeing her.
Right, that's what happened.
Or something like that, yeah.
She texted him. She Facebook friended him. I think she messaged him. But the actual, you know, Elizabeth Shue actually reprising her role was season 3. And I heard that at that time they didn't even know if she was gonna reprise the role. But it actually worked out that she was able to do it, and you know, it fit perfectly with the which is kind of odd because she messaged him, and then there would have been no payoff with that. I mean, that would have been kind of lame. But yeah, like I was getting back to season 5. They totally redeemed the situation because she ended up being, you know, his wife's cousin. And, you know, basically that's how Daniel and his wife meet, through her. And I don't know if you recognize her at first when it happened, because when they introduced her in the episode. Because, you know, I was watching the thing, and then when his wife, Daniel's wife, was talking about Silver, and she had the reaction of Silver, then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. And then that's when I recognized it was her. You know what I mean? By just her reaction of, what is Silver doing here, or something like that. And then afterwards, of course, they showed the flashback. So that right there, I mean, that shows you the brilliance of Cobra Kai, the creators, and their passion for the series.
Yeah.
And then another thing I loved, I mean, other than, well, this happened in the season finale, I should say, was the Quicksilver. He basically used what Silver used for his harm, for his good. Like, all the stuff that Silver taught him so that he could be a weaker opponent, he turned the tables on Silver and used it against him. Like, that was, like, pure genius. And just that basically made Daniel go back, revert to the way he was. Because, of course, the earlier seasons, Daniel was portrayed as the villain, you know, because we were seeing it through Johnny's perspective, you know, especially once the show came back. And then, of course, a few years ago, there was that theory that Daniel was the villain of the entire trilogy. And then, you know, the first couple of seasons of, especially the first season of Cobra Kai, fed into that theory, you know, because we saw Daniel on a different side. But it was this season is where you actually saw Daniel revert back to his old self, his impulsive self, less like Mr. Miyagi as he's been, you know, all the training that he learned from Mr. Miyagi, you know, he was a more centered, balanced character, whereas Johnny was off the handles, you know. But this season, with Terry Silver's driving him over the edge, and then confronting his fears of facing Silver and using Quicksilver against Silver, like, oh man, that was poetry in motion right there.
Yeah. Yeah,
what did you think of the him using Silver, the Quicksilver on Silver?
Yeah, no, I thought it was genius. I thought it was a genius plan, and
you know, at the end there, made it seem as though we lost Kreese again.
Because
if you remember, like, when the series started, it was believed that Kreese was dead, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And now...
and Karate Kid also.
Yeah,
Karate Kid 3.
You thought he was dead, yeah. And now at the end of this season, we thought, okay, he's dead because the guy stabbed him.
Mm-hmm.
But he faked his own death in order to escape. And now he's gonna try to regain control of Cobra Kai again. So we're gonna see how that goes. But yeah, no, this season six. I can't wait for this next season to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as of right now, they haven't officially announced that there's gonna be a season six. But I mean, it would be foolish if they canceled the season. I mean, as hot
yeah,
as
I got
season,
it. I, because they also have a movie coming out as well. So
right.
we'll see, but. I expect it to be renewed, and we still have to see what's her name,
Hilary Swank reprise her role as Julie Pierce.
Yeah, to help the female students. So
that's like the only thing that's remaining that they need to do. I mean, this season was so great that they could have just ended it off like this, the series. I mean, like that. And
yeah, actually, you know, if it ended like this, I wouldn't be mad.
Yeah,
I actually wouldn't be mad. I mean, it's five seasons. It's had a good run, and we've pretty much seen most of the main characters that we wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
So,
with Kreese getting out of prison, that opens up a reason for season six. If he was locked up behind bars with Silvers, there would have been a completion of the story. But him breaking out, it does leave something to see what he's gonna do, because Johnny and Daniel, ouch, bang my head. They basically, you know, screwed him over when he cooperated with them.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, this was like a phenomenal season. Man, and I hope Hilary Swank can reprise her role.
Yeah.
And definitely. Then we could see, and I assume they're gonna explain that she wasn't able to come to the funeral, because if she was at the funeral and he was there, I mean, like, it would make more sense for her not being able to come for whatever reason, or you know, maybe she felt so much grief she didn't want to come over there or something. Or, I mean, for them to have that moment, because it kind of reminded me of what was that show again? Not Mandalorian. What's the name of the show again? Boba Fett show, the Book of Boba Fett. How they had Luke and Ahsoka meet, but unfortunately, the fans were robbed of the opportunity of seeing how they first met each other, because that's what the fans really wanted to see, because. Ahsoka was basically like an aunt to him, even though prior to the Book of Boba, they've never been seen in any, you know, any form of media, whether it's animated or TV show or video games. They never appeared on screen with each other. So, you know, with this season six of Cobra Kai, they have the potential of actually showing how they both meet each other. Because it would be weird that they met, you know, other than the funeral, that they could have met each other and the fans would have been deprived of that moment. You know, we'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah, I hope it comes back for season six.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, this was a great season. What more?
Oh, yeah. And then we'll see what happened with Cobra Kai. You know, with basically it looks like everybody left, all the kids left.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see what happens with that. Anything else you'd like to say before, you know, we head out of here?
No, check out your local listings for my show, iMac, and come back here, check out Sports Religion every Saturdays at 11, only on Box Hulk Radio.
Hey, man, you heard the man. Check out Mac's show, iMac. Check out my YouTube channel, Sports Urban Legend TV, and of course, check out Sports Urban Legend every Saturday is at 11. only on Blog Talk Radio. So he's Macaulay Matthew. I'm William Ramo. And again, ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad you guys were able to check out this episode. Feel free to check out past episodes, and hopefully we'll see you next week. Peace.